Okay, so one of the things that you may not know about Lag BaOmer, which it's a rather obvious thing if you look for it, but it isn't really an obvious thing to look for, that the day of the week on which Lag BaOmer falls is always the same day of the week on which Purim fell. Right? So if you think back just a couple of months, right, Purim was also on Tuesday. In fact, there's a mnemonic for remembering that, and it combines the letter Pei for Purim with the letters Lamed Gimel for Lag BaOmer, and it's called Peleg. So whatever day of the week Purim falls on, that's the same day of the week that Lag BaOmer will fall on. Now, to Kabbalists, of course, there are no such things as coincidences, and therefore Kabbalists tend to see some sort of linkage between Purim and Lag BaOmer. I'm not myself particularly inclined towards Kabbalistic literature, so I can't really tell you what the real Kabbalists say, but it seems to me that it's certainly a reasonable excuse for spending a little time just today being happy. So I compiled a small medley of Lag BaOmer songs. So there are two source sheets, two separate source sheets for today, one of which is labeled Lag BaOmer, and I'm just going to go through them without really any words of explanation, because with really only one exception, there really is nothing to explain. The songs that are associated with Lag BaOmer, that is to say, songs that you might actually hear people singing, or snatches of tunes that you may hear people humming on Lag BaOmer as they make their way to Meron in the Galilee, to the ostensible tomb of Rabbi Simeon Bar Yochai, are generally anonymous, and the tunes can't really be identified either. So on pretty much every song that we'll look at in this small medley, it'll say for the Milim, Lo Yadua, and for the Lachan, Lo Yadua. So with that, you may recognize some of them. I have some words, something to say about a couple of them, but let's just simply start off. And let me share the screen with you. And okay. All right. So there is a liturgical poem of relatively recent vintage, meaning not of the medieval Paitanim, not of the medieval liturgical poets, but a reasonably modern one that celebrates Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who, at least in Kabbalistic lore, is regarded as the author of the Zohar. And if indeed you are inclined towards Kabbalism, Kabbalah, I have to do it, okay, makes me sound like Madonna, towards Kabbalah, then you don't ever really say the Zohar. That's kind of only half a word, right? Usually the HaZohar HaKadosh, right, the Holy Zohar. So according to Kabbalistic tradition, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was the author of the Zohar, and that he wrote it in the company of his son, Rabbi Eliezer, the son of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, as I'm sure you know the story, as they were hiding in a cave, fleeing from Roman persecution, which occurred at many occasions, but most significantly in the fourth decade of the second century of the Common Era, during the time that the Jews, led by Bar Kokhba, rebelled against the Romans, and for a brief time were able actually to reassert Jewish independence in the land of Israel. And it is said that the rebellion of Bar Kokhba was supported among the rabbinic authorities by Rabbi Akiva, and that in fact the reason that there are people who observe rituals of mourning during the first 32 days of the Omer is because that is the period of time during which a considerable number of students of Rabbi Akiva died in this attempt to reassert Jewish sovereignty. So the period of the Omer, connecting Pesach and Shavuot, if you were able about 10 days ago to listen to the opening lecture of Rabbi Yoel Ben Nun, is rooted both in ancient agricultural practices in the land of Israel, as well as in historical circumstances. The barley, which is literally what Omer means, begins to grow around the time of Pesach, and that's why beginning on the second day of Pesach, we have what we call Sefirat HaOmer, the counting of the barley, and then 7 weeks later, the wheat ripens. And that's why one of the notable features of Shavuot is the shtei halechem, the wheat loaves that were part of the Mishkan and the Beit HaMikdash. So this period of time has this agricultural significance, and I already mentioned the historical significance related to the Bar Kosba rebellion. So that's why the main characters who feature on Lag BaOmer are Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai himself, and of course his teacher Rabbi Akiva. So here again, just they're very brief, as you can see. We'll just listen to a couple of them and then move along. So if you see I'm highlighting now in the top right-hand corner of the screen, so this in parentheses is identified as a Lachan Amami, a folk tune, Yiddi, a Yiddish folk tune. Here we have pretty much the same words, but to an Oriental, perhaps Ladino or Mizrahi tune. Now, on Lag BaOmer, it's customary to take children on trips. Sometimes they're taken to out to the woods, to wooded areas, where they nominally reenact some of the historical events that took place on Lag BaOmer. They usually equip themselves with bows and arrows, assuming, of course, that those were the weapons of choice for the Bar Kokhba rebellion. On many other occasions, fortunately or unfortunately, however you look at it personally, often the trips on Lag BaOmer are to places like Sesame Street or to water parks, which it's rather difficult, at least at the outset, to see exactly what the connection is to the holiday. But in any event, what we have here is a very interesting thing. What we have is a poem written by one of the well-known early Hebrew poets, Shalag, Shimon Leib Gordon. Right? As you can see, it was written as early as 1901. And if you look at the top right-hand corner of the page, Hayara, 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 Bekeshet Vachetz, right? We'll go out to the woods, go out to the forest, with bows and arrows. Nakuma Netzel, we'll get up and we'll go out. Shamperach Heinetz, because in the forest, that's where flowers are blooming. Yatzitzu, yatzitzu me'al mitzameret kol etz, and from the tops of all of the trees, sham yerek v'zohar, there's both greenery as well as the sun shining through, v'rochav en ketz, and wide open spaces. Nishrok im chasil, will whistle along with the grasshoppers, nizamzem im hazavuv, will buzz along with the flies, nekarker im tzvardea, will hop along with the frogs, shochenet basuf, who dwell in the sea, narutza, narutza achim, right, all brothers together will get up and will run, narutz nishtovev, will be wild, naria, right, will shout, nitzhala, will rejoice, nagila becholev. Now, apart from the reference to keshet vachetz, there's really nothing here that specifically says lag ba'omer. And yet, apparently, as you can see right below it, there is another version of it, which means that the original poem that Gordon wrote simply about going out into the woods or into the forest during the spring to enjoy nature was converted, as it were, into a song celebrating Lag Ba'Omer. So somebody actually interpolated the words Hayom Lag Ba'Omer, Hayom Lag Ba'Omer into Gordon's poem. I don't think it really matters which one I choose, so let's listen to this one. Okay, as I said, another hero of this, at least of the chronological context in which Lag Ba'Omer is situated, is Rabbi Akiva. The words may not be clear on this screen, but they should be clearer on the source sheet. It's actually a rather elaborate poem that describes the romantic relationship between Rabbi Akiva and his wife Rachel. It says, Rabbi Akiva yitzanua, Rabbi Akiva was a humble man, hayavro eben haro imet evrei kalba savua, and he was just simply another shepherd in the service of kalba savua, someone whom the Talmud identifies as being one of the wealthiest men of his era, achnatoha arbaim, and that's the life that Rabbi Akiva led until he was 40 years old. Ra'ata oto Rachel bito shel kalba savua, and he was observed by kalba savua's daughter Rachel, and she saw that he was a cut above, right? And that he was a humble man. So she approached him quietly, secretly, and she said, "Kachoti leisha, let's get married, bitnai, on the condition, shektak takdish zmancha lelimod ha-Torah ha-Kedosha, on the condition that you devote yourself to the study of Torah." And it continues and it tells the story, which you may know. It's a story that's told in the Talmud. First of all, Rabbi Akiva went to Cheder because At the age of 40, he was still illiterate. So the first thing that he needed to learn was the alphabet. And he learned the alphabet. And then, of course, having learned the alphabet, he applied what apparently was a considerable intellect to the study of both the Torah Shebichtav and the Torah Shebaalpeh, until he acquired quite a standing and a following in the Torah community. And as the Talmud tells the story, that he returned home to greet his wife, and she approached him, and his students, who didn't know who she was, held her at a distance. And Rabbi Akiva, if you remember, uttered the famous words, Sheli v'shelachem shela, right? That whatever Torah I was able to acquire and was able to share with you is entirely, you know, to her merit, okay? Something else from this story that you may recall, or you may know about it, but not know its association to Rabbi Akiva and to Rachel, is something that we will speak about more next week, when we spend a good deal of our time, maybe even the entire session, to Songs of Jerusalem, since Yom Yerushalayim falls at the end of next week. And that is that a Yerushalayim Shel Zahav is apparently an item of jewelry, some sort of an ornament that may have been fashioned in the form of the walls of Jerusalem, maybe fashioned in the form of the Temple of Jerusalem, and that its significance in this story is that Rabbi Akiva, in order to somehow repay part of the debt that he felt to his wife, said or promised her that he would bring her a Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. But that, as I said, is for next week. Right now, here is the song about Rabbi Akiva.
היה רואה בין הרואים את עדרי כלבה סבוע עד שנתו הארבעים ראתה אותו לחץ ביתו של כלבה סבוע ראתה אותו לחץ שהוא מעולה וצנוע אמרה לו רחל תחשי קח אותי לאישה בתנאי שתקדיף זמנך ללימוד התורה הקדושה רבי עקיבא איש צנוע היה רואה בין הרואים את עדרי כלבה סבוע עד שנתו הארבעים והיו גרים במתבן וגורן אחד לא ידוע זוג אחד פשוט ללא שם שהיה מעולה וצנוע ובבוקר היה מלקט התבן מתוך שערה אמרה לו רחל תהיה אהובי גדול בתורה רבי עקיבא איש צנוע היה רואה בין הרואים את עדרי כלבה סבוע עד שנתו הארבעים קם הרב ונסע לבירה לגמוע תורה כמבוע ושם בגורן נשארה ביתו של כלבה סבוע ומקץ עשרים שנה כאשר הלבין שערה שב בעלה לביתו והוא גדול בתורה רבי עקיבא איש צנוע היה רואה בין הרואים את עדרי כלבה סבוע עד שנתו הארבעים חזר הרב לביתו וכל נפשו געגוע חזר הרב אל אשתו ביתו של כלבה סבוע הדפו המשם תלמידיו אמרו לסור אישה אמר הרב הניחוה כי היא תורתי הקדושה איש צנוע היה רואה בין הרואים את עדרי כלבה סבוע עד שנתו הארבעים לה 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 לה
Okay. So of course, it's more of a love song, really, than anything else. But that's not inappropriate, because if you stop to think about it, most of the things that we know about Rabbi Akiva all have something to do with love. For example, Rabbi Akiva is known to have said that the single most important principle in the Torah, right? What did he call a klal gadol ba Torah? The ahavta l'reacha kamocha, right? Love. According to the legend, Rabbi Akiva was tortured to death by the Romans, and he expired while reciting the Shema. But reciting which particular phrase of the Shema? V'ahavta et Hashem Elohecha b'chol avavcha u'v'chol nafshecha. Right? That Rabbi Akiva said that his entire life he wondered, what does it mean to love God with all your soul? So now he sees what it is. So Rabbi Akiva loved God. Rabbi Akiva loved his fellow man. Rabbi Akiva loved his wife, Rachel. So it's really not all that inappropriate to actually compose love songs about Rabbi Akiva. Okay. Now, as kind of a transition, we have actually a couple of more. Let's take a quick look. There are one or two more songs that celebrate that particular feature of Lag BaOmer in which midurot, right, bonfires are lit. So again, just very quickly, you see the words are not known author, the tune is unknown, but again, it talks about Esh Esh Midura, right? The flames of a bonfire, or to Ura, they're illuminating. Bli Dibur, no words, Bli Omer, Lag Ba Omer, Lag Ba Omer.
שבר דופן של גיגית, צרוק לאש כיסא רעוע, לוח עץ מעיל קרוע, אש אש מדורה, אור תאורה, בלי דיבור ובלי אומר לגבה, אומר או לגבה, אומר.
So what I have here is an enumeration of things that people used to throw into the bonfire to keep it going. Chishuk chavit, parts of an old box. Sheber dofen shel gigit, a broken wooden cask. Kisei ra'ua, a broken wooden chair. Luachetz, just any old piece of wood. Me'il karua, even fabrics, worn out clothing. So all of these were gathered together and they were thrown onto the fire to keep it burning. Here again, or at least in this case, there's actually an identification of the author. And again, it's from the early 1930s. And again, it celebrates the Midura.
אורי 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 אש עוד עצים לך נקושש וסביבך פה נחולל כל הלילה כל הליל.
Okay. Now, as I was saying just a moment ago, as a kind of transition from songs about Lag BaOmer and from the last two songs that focus specifically on bonfires, and to move back more into our more traditional subject of early songs of the pioneers and of the state of Israel. So I chose this, which is, technically it would be called Nishtahin or Nishtaher. It's not really a Lag BaOmer song, but it is a song about a Midura. And it's a song that's called Hora Midura. And again, when you hear it sung, right, you'll be able to detect that typical beat to which a hora is usually danced. This was written by the famous poet Natan Alterman, and it's very significant in terms of the wording. It says, "Banu bli kol vachol, we arrived here. And he's talking on behalf of a generation of people who arrived in Israel after the Holocaust. He says, we've arrived here, b'li kol v'chol, without anything. Anu, we are aniyei etmol, we're the people who yesterday were totally impoverished. Lanu, but to us, hagoral, fate, masar, has given over, has entrusted us with milyonei hamachar. We're responsible for those who will come after us. Hora, again the Hora dance, ali ali, right? Eish hadliki bileili. And to light a fire at night. Again, as I said, it is called Hora Nidura. Tahora, right? The flame of the bonfire is a pure flame. Rabat Ora, and it's quite luminous. Hora Nidura. Tsena la ma'agal, go out into the dance circle. Tena shir mizmor la dal, and address a song to those who are worse off than you. Hine ne'esfu lirkod b'nei ha'oni v'hashov. Because the people who are dancing along with you are themselves people who come from poor families and people who have been downtrodden. And again, the theme, Hora Ali Ali, Eish Adliki Bileili, Tohora Rat Rabat Ora, Hora Midura. Sorry. And since we turned our clock somewhat back, we have seen previously several songs that were set to poems that were written by Shaul Chernyakhovsky. And this is one of the better known ones. I was kind of saving it up for towards the end of the class, so to speak, which is called Hoy Arutzi Moladati. And let me get the words up here because I okay. Oh, come on, it's the wrong. Okay. I just wanted to take a moment before we listen to it, just to simply point something out. I have mentioned on occasion that there are websites that feature not only the Hebrew words to these songs, but that in many cases also provide English translations, and in some cases even transliterations into English. And indeed, you might find some of them useful. But I just want to inject a word of caution and that a lot of these English translations were apparently made by people who sat there with dictionaries. And when you translate a text, looking up individual words in dictionaries, you tend to make a lot of mistakes. So, for example, let's look at this one, just at the first few stanzas. So the poem by Chernyakhovsky goes as follows. Hoy artsi moladeti, right? My land, my homeland. Har trashim, right? A mountainous country with lots of rocks. Kereach, and a lot of places on which nothing grows. They look bald, okay? Ede ulpeh. It's a difficult expression, right? Herds, but not large herds. Of se ugedi, of sheep and of goats. Zahav hadar sameach. Zahav hadar would be oranges, right? Citrus fruits, golden citrus fruits.
The words are not on the screen.
Monasteries, pardon?
The words are not on the screen.
Pardon me. I thought I must have pressed the wrong button. Okay. Now is that?
Yes.
Okay. Minzarim, monasteries. Gal, just simply piles of stones. Matseva, tombstones. Kapot tit al bayit. Kipot tit al bayit. And mud domes that were used as roofs for many buildings. Moshava, a place that's supposed to be a settlement. Lo noshava, but in which it's not particularly well populated. Zayat Eitzel, Zayat, and a lot of olive groves. Eretz Morasha, right? A land of our inheritance, of our legacy. Dekel Rav Kapayim, lots of palm trees with lots of fronds. Geder Kav Tzabar Rasha, and lots of fences, as it were, a rows of prickly thorn bushes, or if you wish, of cactuses. Now it says, Nachal Kima Hamayim. Kamea, Kaf Mem Hei, in Biblical Hebrew, is to long for. And it's talking about Nachal streams, that instead of being filled with water, right, they long for water. Okay? And yet, look at the translation. It was translated as streams so much water, clearly misunderstanding the word kama as the word kama. Okay. Reach pardesei aviv, the fragrance, the aroma, is of citrus groves in the spring, meaning you can smell the citrus fruits. Shir tziltzal gamelet, you can hear the song, as it were, or the music that's being made by the ornaments that were placed about the necks of camels in their caravans. Chel cholot layam saviv. Now, what surrounds the sea? What surrounds the sea is not an army of sand. It's not chel like in chayal, a soldier. Chel is a biblical synonym for a choma, for a wall. It's talking about chel cholot layam saviv, the sea, as it were, the Mediterranean, is as though there is a wall of sand surrounding it. Sel shikma, the shade of a sycamore tree, nofelet, the shade is falling down. And there are other, as you see, I've highlighted them, and if you can go over them at your leisure, if you wish. But let me take us back now to the music.
Thank you.
Okay. This brings us to the closing set of two or three songs. We'll see how many we have time for. All of which have something very interesting in common. And that is that these are not originally Jewish, let alone Hebrew songs. These are songs that that made their way into the Jewish population of Israel through translation. Okay? The first one, for example, seems to be a quintessential Israeli song. I mean, Be'arvot HaNegev. I mean, where else in the world are you going to have a place called the Negev? Okay? And yet the truth of the matter is that in spite of its title, Be'arvot HaNegev, if you take a look, can you make out the name of the author of the words? It's Pyotr Mamaychuk. It's, of course, that doesn't mean per se that it's not a Jewish name. But in this case, it just happens to be simply Russian. Okay? And it was translated into Hebrew by somebody named Rafael Klatchkin. And it was set to a tune by somebody named Menashe Baharav in 1948. Right? The song itself, in the Hebrew words, talks about a woman who has lost her son, ostensibly fighting in battle over the possession of the Negev during the 1948 War of Independence, and how another young man, another soldier, steps forward and offers, you know, to be her adopted son. Okay, Be'arvot HaNegev, in the sands of the Negev, mitnotzeitz hatal, in the early morning you can see the dew sparkling. Be'arvot HaNegev, ish magei nafal, a defender of the land of Israel fell. Lo nasham hanari, no longer breathes. Nadam halev, his heart has stopped. Et blorit hasa'ar, and his hair. Ruach telatev, right, he's lying there, and the wind, as it were, is blowing through his hair, but he's dead. Halumat atzevet v'yagon nora, in shock. Kenan itzevet, an elderly woman, his mother is standing there. V'noseit dvara, and she's speaking. And what does she say? Hadim'a nigeret me'eneimcha, the tears are flowing from your mother's eyes. Bakadur oferet, a leaden ball, a bullet came, vayifalach libcha, and it pierced your heart. Et bechori, her older son, she says, shachalti, she lost an older child, bimtsulot hayam. Maybe he was in the palyam, the early Israeli navy. Maybe he was lost as a passenger on a ship that was bringing illegal immigrants. It's just simply implicit. Ve'otcha, and you, she's saying now about this younger son, Gidalti, I raised you l'magen ha'am, to continue in the tradition of defense. Haim, speaking about the enemies, lo yishburunu, they won't break us, biatmut, either by turning us into orphans, ushchol, or into bereaved parents. Haim lo ya'akrunu b'niv, they will not displace us, lamrot hakol, in spite of all that they try. Az then tsa'ad kadima nar geva koma, a tall young man stepped forward, vayomarla, and he said, ima, to address the woman as though she were his mother, Allah bidim'a, don't cry. Bachureinu ima, all young men nowadays, bimei pekuda, mulson einu ima, and they stand up against the enemy, kechomat plada, as a wall of steel. Mulshodeid v'melach smei damim oyev, in the face of bloodthirsty enemies, tenini v'heyelach anuchi levein, allow me to be your son. Be'avot HaNegev, there hulachatz yada, he took her hand, im tirtzu chavraya, ein zo agada, of course the famous words that close one of the works of Theodor Herzl. So as I said, the interesting thing is that this indeed is actually a Russian folk song. Let's see if we can get it. Here, Okay.
ערבות הנגב מתנות את הדם ערבות הנגב איש מגיע מנפל לא נושם הנער אין אדם חלים את בלורים חסר הוא אחר Man atzeve veyagon enora en zekinan atzeve venosei devara adima anigere benei mecha makadur ofere vaye שחלתי במצולות הים ואותך גידלתי למגן העם הם לא ישברונו ביד דמות ושכול הם לא יעקרו בני למרות העם צעד קדימה נער גבקומה ויאמר לה אמא אל לך בדימה בחורנו אמא בימי פקודה ולצון אינו אמא כחובה פרדה ולשודד במלך צמד עמים נויים תהיני ואהיה לך אנוכי לבין בערבות הנגב ולחץ ידם אם תראו
Excuse me. I just want to add one word about the closing line, which, as I said, is the closing line of Herzl's book, Alt Neuland. It's an interesting thing. Of course, Herzl didn't write in Hebrew. Herzl wrote in German. And what Herzl wrote in German is that if you believe in something, right, if you will it, he says it won't be, and he used the German word Märchen, which means fables. Okay? That's why into Hebrew it was translated as Ein Zo Agada, because the Hebrew word for a fable is an Agada. But the interesting thing is that Herzl's intention was that if you really want something to happen, then it'll happen, even if it really doesn't seem to be something that ordinarily would happen. So the curious thing is that at least in the earliest Yiddish translation of Herzl's Alt Neuland, they translated Ein Zo Agada as Das wird nicht kein Babameise. Okay. We move along. And we have here yet another song that you may or may not be acquainted with. That also turns out to be, again, although, you know, it seems to depict a situation that could very well have transpired in Israel in either 1948 during the War of Independence, or unfortunately on any one of several subsequent occasions that Israelis went to war. It's called Shnei Chaverim, and it's the story of two soldiers who were buddies. It says, Hayo hayu Shnei Chaverim. Once upon a time, there were two friends. Echad Rav Turai, one was a corporal. Hasheni Chayal Pashut, the other was just an ordinary private. Okay? So, ostensibly, they're not just in the army, but they're on the front lines. Because the next line says, Pit'om, all of a sudden, suddenly, Sharak Kadur, you could hear the whistle of a bullet. Echad Mehem Nafal. And one of these two buddies, right, was wounded. He fell. So now the other one says, Hoshatti lo yadi. I reached out my hand to help him. Etayadu lo lakach. But he refused my help. Hoshatti lo charbi. I offered him either my sword, my bayonet. Etacherev lo lakach. And again, he refused it. Okay. Kariti lo habor. Okay. I dug a foxhole for him. Elaboru lo zachal. But he wouldn't crawl into it. There are other words that aren't in this version in which it says, Yarakti befanav, right? Since he seemed to be, you know, to refuse all assistance, right? I spit on him, right? And it says that he didn't wipe the spittle off, okay? And then here comes the last line. So you're thinking up until now, well, this is really some song of bravery, but it really isn't. What it seems to be is a song of somewhat of a parody. Because it says, Hoshatti lo kosit. I offered him a drink. Et hakos, who came lakach? Meaning, he wouldn't take my physical assistance, he wouldn't take my sword, he wouldn't, right, he wouldn't go into the foxhole that I dug for him, right? But when I offered him a drink, right, he took it. So as I said, there's somewhat something, you know, either, you know, an element of parody in here. And indeed, not surprisingly, not only does this turn out to be a song that came to Israel from Russia, you can see Milim Lo Yadua, nobody knows who the author was, but it says Rusi, it's originally Russian. It isn't originally Russian. The words here were translated by the famous poet Natan Alterman from Russian. But it's not originally a Russian song. The best that we were able to track down, the best that scholars were able to track down is that this song originated in Germany. And it originated in Germany as early as, where did I note that down? As early as the beginning of the 19th century. Meaning it's somewhat of a classic of Middle or Eastern Europe. About, you know, not modern warfare, but more like medieval warfare. And again, it depicts the relationship between, you know, fellow soldiers. But what I want to do in order to share this with you is to show you this website, which I have to change here in order to show it to you. Yeah, here we go. Let me see if we can get it up here. Oh, you do see it. Okay. Do you see the top of the page? It says Shir Hu Lo Rak Milim. Okay. So this is actually the title of a book. I mentioned it way, way back in the very, very first class that we had when I spoke about what inspired me, other than my wife, to give this class. And I said that one of the things that inspired me and that also made it possible was that I came across this book by a contemporary researcher from Tel Aviv University named David Asaf. And the book is called Shir, a Song, Hu Lo Rak Milim, consists of more than words. And the subtitle is Pirkei Masa, as it were, a travelogue, Bazemer HaYivri, to travel through Hebrew songs. And what he did was, to the best of his considerable ability, he traced back the origins of the words and the tunes of a number of well-known Israeli folk songs. And this is one of them. This link is there on the source sheets, because it is through this link that I got this particular rendition of it. So let me put the words back up, and we'll listen to a duet between Geula Gil and Theodore Bekel singing this song. Okay, we'll save the remaining song, which was also a translated Russian song, for another occasion. Let me take a quick look at the chat. Sources. Okay, sources. Oh, I don't think anybody particularly knows what Shimon Bar Yochai's Yoret site is. When I was a student in Israel in the 1960s, somebody told me that the first story, again, it could be an urban legend, that they once approached the official in the Ministry of Religious Affairs who was in charge of holy places. And they told him that the Talmud says that when the Mashiach comes, all of the righteous people will come out of their graves. So what is he going to do when the Mashiach comes and he'll be out of a job? And they said that with a straight face, his answer was not to worry. There are no genuinely righteous people buried in any of the places that the Ministry of Religious Affairs supervises. So, you know, it's a cottage industry in the Galilee. On the side of just about every ancient road, there are tombs. And the tombs probably, there are probably people buried there. Some of the people buried there may actually have at one time been righteous people. I doubt very much whether all of the different graves that are marked as the graves of Rabbi Meir the miracle worker, Rabbi Meir Baal Hanes, are actually graves of Rabbi Meir Baal Hanes. But in any event, as I said, that's just simply the way it is. Okay. Yeah, different, as I said, there are different ways to celebrate Lag BaOmer. Okay. I don't know. Rachel seemed to have loved the Torah even more than she loved Rabbi Akiva. I won't sit in judgment of that. Okay. Yeah, Midbar Sin also was translated as a Chinese desert, right, rather than the Sin or Sinai desert. And I said, you really got to watch out with these translations. The little bird is calling. Yes, again, it's a Russian folk tune, the tune you recognize correctly. Okay. Right. Okay. Yes, David Asaf has a blog, a weekly blog called Oneg Shabbat. You may remember we mentioned Oneg Shabbat. That's the cultural phenomenon that was inaugurated in part by Bialik in Tel Aviv in the 1920s and 1930s as a kind of a way of keeping popular culture alive, but still linking it somehow to something traditional. So yes, the people who gathered in Bialik's house and in other public places on Friday night didn't come there for Fabrengen, you know. They didn't come there, you know, to daven Kabbalah Shabbos, right? They came there, there were lectures, there were singing, but again, they made a deliberate attempt, as it were, to traditionalize it by at least calling the phenomenon Oneg Shabbat. Okay, as I said, yeah, we have two more classes.
Can I say something?
Let me just, we have two more. We have two more classes. Next week, as I said, we will devote primarily to songs about Yerushalayim, since Yom Yerushalayim falls at the end of the week. And since the very last class is during the week in which Shavuot falls, I'll see if I can't put together a medley of songs celebrating Torah. And with that, I wish you all a good week, and take care.